The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, as it always is, and they've been serving the community since 1974. If you'd like to reach them to talk about insurance or thank them for sponsoring Our State, the number is 919-781-1973. And now we return to the April 2018 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. Our theme this month is The Secret Life of Spring. And we're going to get started today with the first of three or four articles entitled Heirloom Earth. Letting kids discover what's beyond those breakers, past that bend in the trail, there, just out of reach, just requires trust and faith, and yields the stewards of tomorrow. Nice photo here of what you can see from one of the many spots on the Appalachian Trail. A lot of pretty yellow flowers here. We took you because we wanted you to see, to hear, to feel, to jump off that boulder in the North Fork of the French Broad, and then stare back at us, eyes wide and full of shocked, frigid knowledge, to climb aboard a seaplane for real life, as one of you said, and imagine what it would be like to look down at the land sliding past, at the rivers meeting to the sea. To open a train window or stand on the deck of a ferry and put your hands or your face into the wind. We needed you to feel lost, to be lost with us, to follow the blazes until we couldn't quite follow them any longer, to trust first the old dog and then the new dog to help us find our way back, to trust a dog, to understand what it is like to hike along a ridgeline that's not quite dangerous, not really, but where it matters that you pay attention all the same. To hike to a bald where we could look down at the hawks and buzzards circling below. To catch hold of the notion that soon enough all of this might belong to you. We took you to state lines to teach you about here and there, about boundaries and demarcations and the names we try to put to things. We took you to state fairs to teach you about rides and fried food and the wobbly feeling of riding back home along a dusky interstate, the headlights of oncoming cars blinking through the median. We took you to museums and libraries to show you, prove to you, that there was quiet in the world. We took you back home so you could show us that there wasn't. Not really. Not until you fell asleep. My God, how we loved bedtime. You both slept, each of you, like you'd fallen from some great height. Most nights you had. We took you to the edge of the ocean and lied, promised you'd be safe, that everything would be fine. What was it that you two named the water past the first set of breakers? Barely scary? Can we go out and see barely scary? And each year we did, in a raft, I spent an hour blowing up, just like my own dad did for me. The inescapable, asphyxiating ritual of fatherhood. Out we went in that damn raft, and we only tipped a few times, enough times to teach you the difference between in the boat and not. Enough times to teach me the difference between fun and fear. We stood in the waves and helped you surf, helped as much as we could, told you the trick was just to believe you could do it, on your knees first and then standing, as though anything were that simple. We let the waves roll you, send you under, and when we needed to, we lifted you spluttering back above the surface. That green-black feeling of not knowing which way is up, salt in your nose, heart hammering, that we couldn't teach you. We had to let you find that and find out what to do with it by yourself. We took you to fields and cut you loose. We showed you bats and lightning bugs, taught you how to look for Orion. Hey, Daddy, it's that guy! We tried to show you truly dark night skies. We let you climb trees, let you climb far higher than we should have. You taught yourselves how to ride bikes, paddle kayaks. We sat at the edge of a dock on some mountain lake and thought about whether we were letting you paddle too far. I can swim out there if there's a problem, I told your mother. Not in time, she said, which was right, of course. We let you go. We let you go. We learned to try to let you go. Only a little at first. Around the bend in the trail, up the beach a ways, into the woods, around the block on your bikes, down the big hill on the sled, by yourselves. We traveled with a first aid kit and needed it all the time, congratulating ourselves over cocktails for letting you get far enough to get into trouble required taping and bandaging. We hoped, I guess, that we might raise you to do the same, to take your own dogs and kids, if you want them, out into the world, to wash their wounds, to teach them in turn to take care and become familiar. We wanted you, most of all, to remember, to understand what inheritance means, how to live here in this place, this heirloom earth, to know, to really know what it means to say you're from somewhere, what it means to call a place home. Another great story from Drew Perry, not specifically referring to the we and the toad that time. Next, the botanical cure. The blooms we give in celebration and in grief commemorate the same thing, life. For an artist and mother who presses and preserves them, those petals represent something else, hope. Written by Louise Jarvis Flynn. Six little Buddha heads made of stone act as paperweights on Sarah Edie Boyd's work table. Oh, a friend gave those to me, she says, delighted. They're perfect, just the right size to hold stems in place without crushing them. She sets one upright. See, the bottom of this head is flat. The jumble of bangles on her wrists clink as she moves around her studio. Sweetgrass Botanicals, a cozy two-story warren behind her house in the historic Buena Vista neighborhood in Winston-Salem. The small rooms open into each other and are filled with stacks of plastic sleeves holding delicate, preserved flora, some pinned to cardboard, some loose, all piled beneath work to do a... Some pinned to cardboard, some loose, all piled beneath work tables along brick walls and on shelves. Rows of flowers presses bide their time until Sarah deems their contents ready. Even the ceiling, papered with the illustrated paper of a 100-year-old herbarium, is all about plants. I used to feel territorial, she says, appraising a cluster of tissue-thin hydrangea the color of seafoam. I would love a piece so much, but now I do so many, I can let them go. Her pressed botanicals are collected by interior designers from D.C. to Charleston and hang in stately homes and elegant offices across the country. In her hands, flowers that shouldn't last a week are suspended in time. A peony holds onto its bright May blush, a magnolia its creamy complexion. A bullfrog orchid, pressed thin as vellum, reveals a skin as intricately veined as a human hand. Removed from their natural landscapes and protected under glass, familiar plants are newly intriguing. a framed tobacco leaf, part of a series on southern cash crops, looks both tough and papery. The texture of a pocket-worn dollar bill, saved and smoothed out. This leaf came from a tobacco farm in Caswell County, where Sarah's husband of 8 years, Barry, grew up. We were driving past a field, seeing these giant coarse leaves, and I just went insane, Sarah says. I said, Barry, you have to stop the car. I've got to get some of this. She keeps pruners in the back seat for such an emergency. But Barry refused, telling her, you can't go on someone's field and start cutting their tobacco. You'll get shot. It's not like stopping to cut some Queen Anne's lace. He did have childhood friends who owned a tobacco farm, though, who let Sarah take all she wanted. In return, she gave each of them some bright leaf, pressed and framed. The farmers asked her to do a set for their sons, too. I want them to see this like you did, one of them told her. It's beautiful. Understanding plants and their power to pull us back to a place, feeling in time, is Sarah's sixth sense, one that's helped her and those she loves find grace in life's heartbreaks and lasting meaning in its celebrations. Valentine's Day, 2015, the day flowers are asked to speak up, to announce their intentions. Roses for young love, peonies for old, tulips for the newly smitten. At 3 a.m., phone call wakes Sarah. Her oldest son, Parker, was calling from Charleston to say that his brother, Drew, a chef, had gone into cardiac arrest after work. By the time Sarah got to the hospital, the 33-year-old was in a coma. In the days that followed, Sarah was warned that Drew might not wake up. And if he did, he would be in a vegetative state. Parker and his brother Rob read to Drew constantly until their voices were ragged. 6 long weeks later, he was released from the hospital, blind, barely able to speak, and paralyzed on his right side. But Sarah told anyone who would listen, this boy is coming back. He will see, he will work, he will walk. First, though, Drew desperately needed one of the few available beds in a top rehabilitation facility, Shepherd Brain Injury Clinic in Atlanta. A blessing of chance, as Sarah calls serendipitous moments, opened the door for him. For 32 years, Sarah worked all over the country as a landscape architect, specializing in wildflowers and native plants. In the 1990s, while living in Atlanta, she designed wildflower gardens along the city's bike and walking paths, many of which connected to one spot, Shepherd. While her friends in Winston-Salem organized a team of Sarah's angels to take care of her house and yard and boost her spirits, Sarah and Drew settled in at the clinic. To help pass the days, weeks, and months it took for her son to relearn a lifetime of basic skills, Sarah pressed flowers. Brides shipped her their bouquets, packed in ice or spritzed with water, much to Sarah's chagrin. Moisture roads them, she says. People she met through the clinic invited her to their own gardens, and she pressed their flowers, too. It was one thing that got me through, she said, having that beauty and fragrance to just fall into. It reminded me that this will get better, and life is beautiful, and Drew is going to get better. Barry often came down with comfort and news from home, but in one visit, he, too, ended up in the hospital after suffering a heart attack. Having two patients at two different hospitals was overwhelming, and friends and strangers rallied to Sarah's side. When you're broken down, she says, just flayed to the bone, and people offer you kindness, your heart just melts into it. As a child in her grandmother's garden, Sarah found kinship with flowers. My sister Mary didn't even notice a flower until it was the same color as her lipstick, she says, laughing. But I could be entertained all day with my face in the grass watching little ants. The sprawling limbs of an old magnolia tree were Sarah's jungle gym, training her for later escapades in the mimosa trees near the river. Scrambling up into the branches, careful not to drop the book in her hand, she would settle in to read with the pink ballerinas of the mimosa all around me, she says. The Secret Garden, read and reread, inspired her to become a landscape architect. In fact, in every project throughout the decades, designing outdoor public spaces from the Carolinas to Hawaii, she says, I had to have a secret garden, an area that was intimate, where when you were in it, it felt like you and that little robin were the first ones on earth to see a crocus bloom. After settling in North Carolina, she built another one, a water garden, behind her studio. Season to season, Drew's condition improved incrementally, but soon another crisis hit. Sarah's sister Mary was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. I couldn't process why all of this was happening at once, Sarah says. But as my sister got sicker and sicker, she showed us how to handle it. Mary's best friend arranged a trip for the family, a grand finale of sorts, to the Maui Four Seasons Hotel, with its 14 acres of groomed gardens. Sarah shipped a case of presses to the resort so that she could pick and press flowers with Mary. One evening, as Sarah unpacked her presses in the hotel room, the housekeeper, Margaret, asked what they were for. When Sarah told her, Margaret said, I could live without my furniture, my clothes, but I cannot live without the orchids my husband and I planted around our house. Her husband's recent death meant that Margaret would soon have to move, and Sarah couldn't stand the thought of her never seeing the orchids again. Another blessing of chance. She told Margaret, tomorrow night, when you come for turn down, bring me the orchids. I'll press them. Petal by petal, Sarah dismantled the flowers for pressing. Now Mary is preserving the memory of that trip, and Martha keeps her husband close in the orchids. Of all the native southern plants that Sarah has fussed over and tended to, her favorite flower is not among them. The distinction belongs to a bloom originating in South Asia, the lotus. The important thing about a lotus is that it's rooted in mud, and from the depths come all that beauty, she says. When the petals shatter, there's this amazing structure, this huge seed pod underneath supporting it. In spring, when the garden behind Sarah's house leafs out, the pastel lotuses pop open in her quiet little pond. She presses a few for friends, an acknowledgement of all that life requires in exchange for all of this beauty. A lotus says it so simply. Victorians popularized the language of flowers, a way to speak frankly without saying a word. A sunflower is a yelp of joy. Dogwoods blooming at Easter speak to renewal and beginnings. Lavender is youth and grace personified. Sarah learned this language intuitively as a child, playing in her grandmother's garden, and she can't help teaching it to others. Recently, she finished a piece for a young man who wanted her to press flowers from his fiancée's mother's garden. The woman's mother had died years ago, but her flower garden was still very much alive. The groom wanted to give a part of it to his bride on their wedding day, Sarah says, so she would know that her mother was with them. Like Mary, is still with Sarah. As Mary's illness progressed, Sarah asked her, "How do I do this without you when you're gone?" Mary told her, "You sprinkle my ashes in your garden. When you need my advice, you go out there with a glass of wine and look up into the sky and ask me, and I'll tell you what you need to do." This spring, Sarah will sprinkle Mary's ashes among the water lilies and the pickerel reed and lotuses in her secret garden. The sisters may talk about Drew and his hope to drive again. He lives in Charleston now with some assistance and cooks for 4,000 sailors and soldiers at the Navy Weapons Station. Or they may talk about their own mother, who moved to Winston-Salem to be close to Sarah. Other challenges will emerge, no doubt, and Sarah expects to rise to them all. Because here in her studio, she is rooted, resilient. All the friends from my neighborhood and my church, they saved me. They held me up, she says. Now you couldn't come get me out of Winston-Salem. Think of a wheel, she says. For me, the hub is the earth, the southern soil, and everything comes from it like spokes. It's the part that centers me, and that's how my wheel rolls. You are listening to Our State Magazine on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. If you have any comments about our program, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. And now a perpetual harvest, filed away in card catalog drawers in Watauga County Library. Packets of heirloom seeds await planting, and with every seed comes a story. The heirloom seeds arrive in glass jars, plastic bags, and flower-embossed envelopes. They come by the dozens and hundreds. It's what Lindsay Giglio hoped would happen when her organization, Blue Ridge Women in Agriculture, partnered with the Watauga County Public Library in Boone to open a seed library. What she didn't expect were the stories. Those are delivered in the fragile script of a grandmother's hand and the smudged ink of farm workers' fingers, remembrances of the people who are helping build the Watauga Seed Library. The collection is housed in a repurposed card catalog next to a circulation desk where patrons can borrow up to 10 seed packets for the growing season with a promise to return the new generation. The seed library donation forms were originally intended for practical information, like planting instructions, but Giglio has found that they foster emotional connections. Donors tend to write love letters to other growers, saying things like, "Take the seed that was handed down to me and do what you wish with it," she says. They'll poetically describe the taste of a vegetable and talk about the lives of the people who cared for the plants before them, neighbors and family members. It's beautiful. Seed saving has been part of human history for thousands of years, and it's ingrained in the Appalachians' cultural heritage. Sharing was once a neighborly hand-to-hand ritual, but the seed library is cultivating new participants in an old tradition. After opening the Watauga Seed Library, Giglio's organization partnered with Cooperative Extension Services to open a second one at the Ashe County Public Library. A third seed library in Caldwell County was inspired by the High County efforts, and the idea is trending with local libraries in McDowell, Mecklenburg, Rockingham, Durham, Nash, and Carteret counties, among others. What thrives in one region of North Carolina won't necessarily grow well in another. It's part of what makes the concept so meaningful. As recently as 1900, human food came from 1,500 different plants, representing thousands of varieties suited to particular places. Today, 75% of our nutrition comes from 10 species of plants. The industrialization of agriculture has eroded diversity, with crops designed for volume and travel rather than taste. As a whole, the United States has lost more than 90% of the heirloom vegetable varieties that were available at the turn of the 20th century. Seed libraries attempt to fix this. Around the world, there are genetic centers for food crops, and Western North Carolina seems to be a hot spot for beans. The region has varieties that have adapted to harsh conditions and contributed to resident self-sufficiency. These heirlooms belong to the mountains that have sheltered them for generations. And more often than not, their caretakers are willing to share. There's a whole language when you talk about beans up here, Giglio says. Everyone loves the greasy bean varieties. You don't say it with an S, you say it with a Z, greasy. If you don't, old-timers will know you're not from around here. Since founding the seed library a year ago, Giglio has learned that certain families have signature beans of unique taste and character. Often these heirloom seeds, open-pollinated rather than bred, are handed down with origin stories. One of her favorites was passed on by Yancey County resident Jim Vitetto, along with a collection of turkey craw beans. When Vitetto collected them, he heard the same story over and over again. "My great-grandfather went out hunting. When he brought a wild turkey home for dinner, he found beans in its craw. He planted them, cooked them, and they were delicious, so he kept on growing them." Everyone who knew that story had adopted it as one of their own great-grandfather. Giglio says, once the stories stop being told or these plants stop being planted, they're gone for good. Each seed library has its own way of organizing. In Ashe County, librarians are in charge and donations are presented in alphabetical order. In Watauga County, under Giglio's watch, they're grouped by plant families with hand-illustrated cards and section headers that she painstakingly pecked on a typewriter. Some local seed varieties, like Ash County Pimento Pepper, have developed a cult following their pickling and pimento cheese flavoring capacities. When word spread among High County gardeners that Giglio had some Ash County pimento seeds, people started tracking her down before the seed library had even opened. They'd enter her office with shifty eyes and ask, "Have you got a pimento pepper? Can I get some pimento pepper?" It was like they were trying to find something on the black market, Giglio says, laughing. Now they're freely available via the card catalog, along with a recently donated bean variety Giglio hasn't read the paperwork on yet, MAME beans. "That's not its scientific name," Giglio says, one eyebrow raised. "I wonder what the story is there." That was written by Leanne Henyon, who is the best-selling author of Phenomenal, A Hesitant Adventurer's Search for Wonder in the Natural World. If you're anxious to get your hands on some of those seeds, you can try the Watauga County Library on Queen Street in Boone. You can look up arlibrary.org/Watauga, if you wish. We're almost out of time, so I'm just going to talk a little bit about some advertisements they have here in the magazine. Here's one from Mount Airy, Music, Mountains, Mayberry. Mount Airy, North Carolina. They get a lot of up-and-coming events listed here for April. Let's see some of the ones that are far out. Girls' Night Out on April 26th downtown. The Attractions Band and Blackmon Theater on the 27th. Jan Britton Owen on April 27th at Old North State Winery. And Dennis Tolbert, also at the Old North State Winery. He'll be there on April 28th. I've got a page here called Made in NC, a Made in North Carolina guide. The first one is for Hickory. It says authentically local. Hickory Hope Brewery. I think it says Breweries Festival, April 21st. Then we got Always the Ideal Gift at Aunt Ruby's Peanuts, 1-800-PEANUTS. They got a good phone number, huh? Then there's the North Carolina Pottery Jewelry Dish. You can get that from the Our State store at ourstate.com. It says this beautiful stoneware dish is hand-built in Gastonia by Bluegill Pottery and features glazed imprints of our state flower, the dogwood, and it costs $34. Finally on this page, Heath's Cheese Straws. Small batch, always fresh, and they come from the Ritchie Hill Bakery in Concord. Well, that's about all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it, and you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us, 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.